is the only life, and we're going to oblivion when it ends. It wouldn't make any difference where we spend our leisure time. It wouldn't make any difference how little discipline we assert. The disciplined and the undisciplined will lie down together in eternal forgetfulness. But if this is not it, and there seems to be quite a possibility that it isn't, then what are we really doing with time? Are we making something out of it? And I think each person should, for their own sake and the sake of their associates, sit down and carefully note the time factor to find out what they can do with time, which is going to make them more able, more intelligent, more understanding than the condition they are in at the moment. How are we going to discover this? Well, one of the things that you always get thrown at you when you try to start such a conversation is that the individual is tired. They've worked. They do not want to be part of a program of further labor. They do not want to consider leisure as labor opportunity. They want to rest. They want to have fun. They want to engage in small talk and very possibly take on a little more alcohol than is good for them. So the idea of planning and disciplining leisure is for the most part resented. The person feels that he has bought the time to do exactly what he pleases. The only difficulty with this is a dedication of this type, when carried into practice, does not seem to work. The individual does not have the happiness he hopes for. He does not find his family as understanding and cooperative as they might be. He finds the programs on TV getting worse all the time. He gets no real satisfaction out of not planning a purposed existence. Now, how do we best gain that which we lack? Those who have these problems should set them up and catalog them properly. They should ask themselves a number of very simple but direct questions as to what makes them happy, how they wish they could spend the time if they could do anything they wanted to, what they are anxious to become more than what they are, and how they are going to face a future that is going to close in on them relentlessly. There has to be something in the form of a plan to make life really valuable. And without value, life is a sort of drifting from the cradle to the grave. There is really no purpose in it. And the history of the world and the present condition of society both indicate clearly that the average person does not purpose his own existence. He depends on outside influences. He can be worked into a frenzy by a tyrant. He can buy things he can't use and doesn't need. He can demand luxuries that are not necessary, and many of them are detrimental to him. He just goes around doing what he pleases, ending sometimes in a premature grave and sometimes in an involuntary bankruptcy. Out of all this, the time is wasted. We have lost approximately 25 years of life. It's not all in one place. It is scattered through. But if a 75-year life span, only about one-third can be said to be available to the average person as time for himself. The other two-thirds go to work and sleep. But this third that belongs to him is a magnificent opportunity for a career. The person has a paid initiation into the best schooling. He has the right and privilege of learning almost anything he wants. And if he wishes to want only that which is best, he will find that his economic situation may improve through less ambition and less extravagance, and he can really have a very important extra life that is now lost. He can have another complete existence. Instead of being a working man for 8 hours and then a sleeping man for 8 hours, he can also be a growing person for 8 other hours of every day, growing up into new aptitudes and opportunities. So, what are the opportunities today? Probably one of the best forms of growth that we can work with now is cooperation and service to each other. The individual finds perhaps the greatest basic joy that there is in the human composition when he brings joy or releases joy through other persons. One of the simplest things we can do is to plan a program of helpfulness, a program of not thinking about ourselves, but earning the respect, admiration, confidence, and affection of other people. It is something to look back quietly upon a good deed that has brought security to another. And this type of backward looking is probably the most cheerful as possible. So service to others. If you do not know what to do, help someone in desperate trouble. Forget being deprived of a few hours of television or being requested to turn away from some ordinary leisure that you have planned, but try to see what you can do to help other people. Now, if you have special trained abilities in these matters, there are many opportunities that open themselves to the person who really wants to help. If you have music as a background and have the abilities, find some young people who want music and cannot afford it. And instead of sitting around gossiping or answering phone calls, take these young people and try to educate them or help them in their musical lessons. If you are in business, take young people who need business training. They will not get proper training in school, but they can get it from someone who has been through it and knows what is right and knows what should occur and what should not occur. Everyone can do something, and out of the best they have done themselves, share with another. Then there are things you can do for yourself. If you are not in a position or do not feel equipped to work with other people, then work with yourself. Develop those faculties and powers which are not functioning properly today. Look over your own life and see what your mind is doing. Is your mind growing, or is it just heaping up one prejudice on top of another? Watch your thoughts and see whether or not you are instinctively criticizing things you do not understand, or have developed powerful prejudices which interfere with justice and judgment. Look over your own nature and then go to work on the problem that you find needs attention. It is not good, however, to try to simply convert yourself. To sit down and say, I shouldn't hold that attitude, is usually not very meaningful. What you really should do if you dislike a certain condition is get into that condition yourself. Move in on it and find out why people think the way they do. Instead of criticizing from some set point within yourself, find out why other people are not more successful in their judgments. I know a number of persons who have simply gone into various walks of life which are not their own in order to find out how other people really live. And it is almost certainly an eye-opener. If you do not wish to go through all this, it then is the best attitude you can have is to believe firmly that every individual is doing the best he can for what he is. And it is always important to try to estimate what he is and help him to become better. We have to sometimes study what we are and find out why it isn't satisfactory, and then start to fill in the areas where we are deficient. Nature tells us from experience that each one of us should have at least three and probably four dynamic interests. These interests are not in conflict unless we put them in conflict. Realities are never in conflict. They simply absorb more and more time, but with judgment and control, they can be properly allotted. First of all, everyone should have a physical regime of some kind. The idea of jogging around the block, however, is becoming a little too dangerous these days, and it is much better simply to have a proper period, short period of physical exercise, and be watchful of the health of the body through diet, through not abusing medications and things of this type. You have a little pattern there to set aside a few minutes a day to make sure that this very useful creature that carries us about has proper attention and care. On the other hand, we must sometimes get this creature over the problem of being utterly spoiled, in which every desire, every craving, every appetite is dynamically fulfilled regardless of cost. This type of attitude will probably result in a short and discomfortable lifetime. Having done this and worked out that, then we can go to the emotional nature. We should have an outlet. If we have art or music, this becomes an outlet, and a little time every day should be devoted to it. If we are not skilled, then the study of art can become very important. The appreciation of art. Beautiful books on art are valuable. And also, art carries us almost inevitably towards the recognition of the dynamics of beauty. The dynamics of beauty also tell us that attitudes are beautiful or not beautiful. Words spoken beautify or deform. Modern art is largely a matter of deformities. Modern music is a matter of deformities. But we have grown so accustomed to it that we assume that these deformities are normal. They are not. Deformity, asymmetry, discords are not ever normal. They are the natural results that arise, however, in lives that are themselves not normal. In art also, we find poetry. We find all kinds of appreciations for beauty in every field. We also feel the importance of the art of living, to live graciously, to live kindly, to endure everything that we can to maintain the essential, simple dignity of a human being. The moment we lose temper, we are destructive. The moment we do not transform or transmute suffering into soul power, we begin to become neurotic. Beauty is something that we must all have. A beautiful picture on the wall, sometimes. A beautiful view out of the window. And if these things are denied us, whatever beauty we can build in the intimate associations in which we exist, there's always the possibility of tuning in some good music on a radio. There are programs on art, on humanities, that do come through on some of these television stations, especially the public service stations. All these things can give us pleasure with growth. But whenever we settle down for an annoying, nice, long evening of murder, we're in trouble. We are sickening ourselves. It's just as though we were slowly taking a poisonous dope. After a while, we reach a point where without a murder, the show is too slow. We demand crime. And of course, the thing that we are all self-deceived by is that we are seeing fabrications and artificial things that have conjured up for audience appeal, and I'm assuming that the world is like the abnormalities we see. Certainly you may find traces of any degenerate influence somewhere in society, but to have it thrown at us day after day certainly disillusions and destroys the integrities which we must build if we want to be good people, successful people. If all else fails, get a good book. Do something that will give you inspiration instead of closing in and making you feel more and more the hopelessness and futility of personal growth. Everything should have some kind of meaning. Another very important point on this level is friendship. Now, friendship today is a very hard thing to have. Most people do not find friendship easy. They are imposed upon. Their friends are too demanding. Their friends are selfish and self-centered. And the individual finds gradually that he is hurt more than helped by contact with society. One thing to do, though, if you find this happening in your own life, take another look and make sure that you are not aggravating other people. Make sure that your own attitudes are not such that other people can't take them any longer. If your great joy in life is to criticize and condemn something, you're likely to gradually drift into a state of loneliness, because people looking to friendship look for one thing more than anything else, and that is proof of the essential kindliness and goodness of human nature. They may fail you, that is their problem. But when you fail them, it is your problem. And everyone should try to so live and think that they can be happy and pleasant and constructive with people who do not exactly agree with them. We should be happy to know that people are trying and doing things, and we shouldn't try to dominate them and make them do only what we want them to. So friendship is very vital, and a small group of congenial persons can make a great difference in life. Now, in the older group where we have retirement problems, friendships can be very vital to the happiness of the older person who wants to share, perhaps, the experiences of his own life with those around him. The best and happiest oldsters are the ones who can look back with a quiet joy upon the simple things of life, which were hard when they happened, some of them, but now they are gradually turning into a roseate remembrance, a kindly realization that things were pretty good. Of course, wherever this type of thing comes along, a sense of humor is very necessary. The individual who is too serious about life to have a sense of humor is always in trouble. Because actually, humor is not, however, ridiculing other people. Humor is simply the recognition of the delightful mistakes that we all make, and which can become very, very valuable as an outlet. Humor is a form of hysteria which relaxes the nervous system without damage. The problems then go back finally to the mind level again. The mind level has all kinds of interests and preferences. For many people, mental recreation becomes difficult these days because of the inconsistencies of society. Probably one of the best ways to develop a better mental relationship with life is to take some field of activity and specialize it. There are all kinds of things that people can do mentally to enrich their lives and perhaps help other people. Very often, an avocational literary career can be developed in which the person finds either in his own life or in the lives of those around him interesting episodes and incidents which he can share with other people. Another form of that is continuing education. If the person is interested in any subject of importance, adult educational opportunities are probably available. And these educational opportunities help to fill in or enrich the mind on some phase of life. Pick something which perhaps you have always felt wasn't right. You've always thought that that particular field was either worthless or actually contributing to some form of mistake, and take a course in it and see what happens. You'll find that very few people intentionally or consciously take up lines of activities which they think are no good. They take up something that they feel they can use or is going to be useful to others. An outsider standing on the side of the line does not realize what makes other people better or makes them think more wisely or more kindly or more thoughtfully. Again, there's other types of exercises and lessons that have only very good mental opportunity building. One is language. Very few people have as full a control of language as they ought to have. And many have no interest or no background in foreign languages. If the older person has leisure, a foreign language will help. Or to complete an education that has been interrupted by the processes of living may bring great satisfaction. There's almost nothing you can take up, from engineering and surveying to barbering or something of this nature, that will not do better for you than watching a TV show. You will learn something, and to learn is to use time for some constructive purpose, and it's some skill, perhaps. Very often persons will find as they go along that if they had a certain kind of knowledge, their affairs would run more smoothly. Therefore, as adults, they can take the courses, study the subject, or read at home, and gradually familiarize themselves with these subjects which have been difficult or unsatisfactory up to the moment. Also, of course, the educational field offers a secondary career in many instances. The individual who works at a certain type of job can at another time go out and take a scouting troop into the as a scoutmaster, or can become associated with youth rehabilitation projects, or can join a useful and civically oriented fraternal or luncheon organization. He can find things to do in which he will share with other people useful activities. It used to be that things of this kind were more or less considered to be men's activities, but today probably the average woman needs them more than the man does, because she needs to experience a world which has been previously dominated largely by male thinking, and she is now working into that field to take her proper place in it. Therefore, everything educational, everything that will strengthen her contributions to society, is far more important to her than small talk or just routine procedures. Everyone should try to find ways to be bigger than they are so that they can do a better job than they are doing. And this is really a joy in the last analysis. There is something very wonderful in having done it right and having everyone else know you did it right. This is an experience not enough of us have. And then, and also on the mental level, we have the creation and inventive side of life. People can begin at any time in life to take up an art or a science and do whatever time permits them to do while in this particular embodiment. I knew a young man many years ago who was so delicate and so infirm, the doctor said he'd never live to maturity. Then when he finally got a little older, they said, well, it's no use training him in anything. He'll never live to fill the job, even if we give it to him. And he drifted along this way till he was about 50 years old. He was still alive and nothing to do and no background for any type of accomplishment. He finally got completely bored with himself. He took up a science, in this case, a part of a biological structure. It took about 5 years to get the education he wanted in it. he became distinguished in his field, and at 80 was still going strong. But he found finally that this not doing anything, or it's too late or too soon, or you're too weak or you're too much involved in other things, is an illusion. The thing is, if you have the incentive and the intention, you can do it. And this, it takes your life and puts it in your own hands instead of leaving it in the keeping of the neighborhood. Another point then comes to the religious matter. Religion is so vitally important that time devoted to it is very useful. But there's one problem that I have observed in connection with religion, and that is that if it is not properly understood, it can be the world's champion time waster. There is nothing that is a greater waste of time than theological argument. And it is also pretty much a waste of time for the average individual to walk out of society to some isolated mountaintop and commune with God for the rest of his life. This does not do any good to anybody. Religion, like every other form of knowledge, must contribute. It must strengthen. It has nothing to do with avoiding and evading life. It is not also the idea that by having some grand and wonderful concept of what is going to happen in infinity, we can go on and be nothing now. This is a common fault in many religious organizations. They retire into groups of their own kind, very small or practically isolated. They'll spend all their time trying to study some system of theology. They try to meditate themselves into nirvana and neglect all the common responsibilities of living. And it is in this that they fail. The purpose of our being here is not to be physically here and mentally somewhere else. The purpose of being here is to learn the lessons that are here. Religion becomes a wonderful help in time of trouble. It is a background inspiration all the time. It also helps to strengthen morality and ethics. It gives us the strength to keep the Ten Commandments. And it gives us the internal moral quality which enables us to appreciate the Sermon on the Mount. Religion, as a tremendous overtone of integrities, is wonderful and highly important. But the individual who wishes to consider religion to be his labor should take a very firm look at himself and see what religion is actually doing for him or to him. If religion is making him more useful, if it is making the family closer, if the religious person is a better father, better mother, better child, that is fine. But if it is simply a series of intellectual allegiances and everybody remains the same as far as conduct is concerned, we are not getting very far. Years ago, I attended a meeting of superannuated clergymen who had a long background of clerical service. And they were a lovely, present, dedicated group of men, most in their 70s or their early 80s, who had a certain smug sense of achievement. They felt that they had given their lives for a cause, and they counted the converts they'd brought to God. But one of them in the corner, a little man with a kind of a wry look on his face, was kind of not quite sure of the rest. He was also, I think if I remember, a Protestant bishop in one of the larger churches. And finally he whispered to me, he said, "You know, I did the same thing. I was an evangelist. I went and had revival meetings, many of them in small communities." He said, "We had thousands of them walking down the sawdust path every time I was there. But," he said, "I had to come back every year because they relapsed up into 12 months. After 12 months, they forgot all about it." So this is the problem with this type of thing. A conversion is something people get over very quickly, for the most part. But a dedication that is experienced within the self can be a tremendous thing if it is a dedication to service, if it is a dedication to unselfish giving. I remember the older ministers used to go to a small town, and Maybe they got $50 a month if they were lucky. More likely they got $25 a month and a few groceries. They worked their whole lifetime with people who had very little and whose mental IQ was by no means prodigious. But they had lives of service. They worked there, they labored every day with those people. And they set an example of unselfish dedication. And their example was many times more important than their sermons. But when you get into a situation today where the minister expects $50,000 a year and $25,000 expense account, where he wants to live in a fine home with a swimming pool and things of this nature, the old dedication to the service of people has gotten pretty weak in many localities. It is now a profession and a business, a career, not a dedication. So the study of religion in the life of the person, whether he intends to go into the ministry or not, the religious life is one of dedications, of self-sacrifice for the service of that which we believe to be the noblest of all things, the glory of God and the security and salvation of our brother creatures. To work with these problems is fine, but the real answer is always in religion. Don't retire into it. Rather, use it, allow it to come through you to serve other people. The great sermon is the good life. And if we are able to achieve that, we achieve everything. So a little ways along the way, we try to find answers to what makes time a wonderful opportunity. An opportunity to grow and to be and to become that which we were intended to be. We can never outgrow our own potential. It is greater than we can ever fathom. Because if we trace deep enough into ourselves, we find God there. We find that everything is flowing from a great spiritual source. Aquinas says in his discussion that man has been given a limited intellectual individuality, that he has been made capable of doing what is right and also failing to do what is right. The reason why this determinism is of the greatest importance is there can be no virtue unless it is a decision. There can be no true right without the realization of that which is not right. Therefore, the individual cannot do everything he pleases, or anything that he pleases. He must do those things which his own capacities make possible. He has the right of choice. Free will is the right of choice. He can choose the better or fail to choose the better. If he chooses the better, the power of choice gives him growth. Or, as the Oriental would say, good karma. If his choice is for that which is not the best, then the experience gives him punishment and pain, and is also karma. Each person has the inevitable and eternal right to grow, to use the potentials that have been given to him, to make his own decisions about character and life. And the degree that he makes these decisions wisely, he grows. And at the end of an appointed span of 80 years, 75 years, or whatever it may be, he goes forth and nature says that he is a good and faithful servant. The infinite accepts the good into itself as part of itself. And each of us, in our own way, must make decisions. And the times of the decisions is the leisure time. It's when we can sit down and think things through. It is gradually building a career around a conviction. And whatever that conviction is, once we have it set up, we should keep it. And we will find that keeping it, in the long run, improves health, saves money, prevents wasted time, and prevents the individual indoctrinating himself in falsehoods and things that are of no value to himself or anyone else. So each one in his own way has to use up time. And the best way to use it is to almost forget it exists because we are so busy doing things that are important for each other. When we no longer really remember that we are working with time, we are probably using it the best, because we are then saying to ourselves, I haven't got much more time left for this, and then hurrying up a little to get more done anyway. We have to really find a proper use for every potential we have. Every thought that we have comes from a thinking power. Every emotion from a great feeling power. Every thought can lead to wisdom. Every emotion can lead to wisdom and also to affection and understanding. Every physical condition leads to the improvement or debility of the body. And over all of this is the incentive. Why should we do these things? Why should we try? Why should we aspire to being better? The answer is that through a religious experience, religious enlightenment, and through the contemplation of the universal plan of things as it has been given to us in the great scriptures of the world, we become aware of the strong reason why we should grow. We realize that it's not just a little decision of our own, that actually the problem of growing better every day is a fulfillment of a purpose, and that we must fulfill this purpose. And failure to do it now simply projects the problem into the future. Nothing is ever solved except by achieving the solution. So in our time, we should be friendly, we should be loving, we should take care of the responsibilities, we should build firm homes, we should be honest in our trades and make weights and measures, we should have a good deal of fun along the way, good friends, kindly associates, and we should live in a world which we are making increasingly beautiful by the simple process of releasing beauty through ourselves. We may do this in spite of the difficulties of world times. In fact, the evil pressures of society make it more important that we find the roots and centers within our own nature. The condition of the world today, as we find it, is a tremendous constructive pressure to the individual to become a better person, to stand for the principles he believes, to work cheerfully in the presence of the discouragements of those around him, to never compromise or falter in the realization that in the great plan of things, all things work together for good. We can help them to achieve that good. We can discover it in ourselves. And in this way, every hour of the day becomes an important element in the unfoldment of the divine plan through ourselves. Well, I guess that's all.